Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 46, entitled The Art of Charm, we chat with the Art of Charm's very own Jordan Harbinger. Guys, we're live. I'm Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is none other than Jordan Harbinger from The Art of Charm. Jordan, what's up, man? Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on the show, man. I appreciate it.
All right, cool, man. Thanks, thanks for coming on. I'm really pumped for today's episode. We got a different mix of topics to talk about, and as we kind of just mentioned, we want to get into how you built up this awesome Art of Charm podcast and, you know, kind of how your career grew from there.
I'm in.
All right, sweet. Did you always, I listen to your podcast quite frequently. It's one of the one of my favorite shows on iTunes anyways. I have a few different ones I listen to occasionally, and yours is definitely up there as far as what I usually take to the gym and take in the car rides and stuff. So one question that's kind of always lingered with me is whether you were always this outgoing and great conversational-wise. I know you, obviously, you're the Art of Charm. You teach guys how to get better at this, but did you always kind of have a thing in you? Were you introverted or extroverted?
Okay, so there's a couple of questions in there, which is cool, and I want to break it down a little bit. So one thing I want to pick on the term extrovert versus introvert, because you didn't misuse it or anything like that. I just want to kind of go and break into it, because I think a lot of people, they do this thing where they're like, well, you know, I'm introverted, so I can't do this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I can't do this because I'm extra, you know, I'm introverted. And this, so they have like a medical excuse for not being social. And I don't like that, because it's BS, right? There's a lot of people who are introverted, like myself, which, believe it or not, I'm technically an introvert, because not to get into the science too much, but basically all that means, introvert versus extrovert, it just means that if you're an introvert, you relax by being by yourself and zoning out and or reading or something. And extroverted people are like, oh man, I've had such a hard day at work. I need to go out and hang out with 20 different friends and have uproarious conversation. But it doesn't have anything to do with your social skill set, other than people who are extroverted maybe are a little bit more adept socially because they've spent more time doing it, whereas introverted people might be a little bit more heady because they've spent more time with themselves. So it doesn't have any bearing on your ability to socialize. It only has a bearing on your propensity to socialize, I would say. So, and I just kind of threw that together on the spot, but that's the science behind it, in a nutshell. And so I was always an introvert. Growing up, I was really quiet. I was really well behaved. Middle school, I was so quiet because I had like major social anxiety, which, you know, looking back, like everybody in middle school probably had that or was just a misbehaved punk. I was kind of both. High school, less so. I was pretty outgoing in high school, which is awesome. But then in college, I kind of went right back in my shell. So it wasn't just a matter of growing out of it for me. And eventually I went to law school, and I've told this story a lot, but I got hired by this guy named Dave at a white shoe law firm on Wall Street, and he was never there. He kind of showed me that in order to generate sales for the firm and deals for the firm, it was all about his social skill set and not about his legal skill set. And I knew I couldn't outwork everyone at the firm, and I knew I wasn't the smartest person at the firm. So I was like, crap, you know, I need to master this social stuff. So I started reading about networking and going out by myself and working on it. And I found that I was able to build an outgoing, charismatic, magnetic, not try to pat myself on the back, but this is what we teach at the Art of Charm. This as a skill set, I was able to build where better than most people who are quote unquote extroverts. So now I meet people who are natural extroverts that are really outgoing, and they might do it a little bit more effortlessly. Like they might get bored and go, let's go out and meet some new people. And I'm like, ugh, that's the last thing I want to do. I'm friggin' tired. You know, so that nature is a little different, but my friends now are largely extroverted folks. You know, they love to go out and hang out. And I've got plenty of introverted friends, too. We just hang out at different times. But it doesn't mean I transformed into an extrovert. It just means that I'm an introvert that has a decent enough social skill set that when I do go out, I can accomplish what I want to accomplish and generate relationships and hang out and have fun doing it. Because it's like a sport. You're not born knowing how to be really good at, like, you know, let's say basketball, right? You're not. But when you practice it enough and you play basketball and you start to find it fun, and then eventually when you start really kicking butt at it, you're like, hey, let's go play basketball, right? It's not that you were born as a tall kid and suddenly you're like, let's play basketball, right? That's not how it works. But when it comes to our social skills, a lot of people have this mistaken belief that it's nature versus nurture, whereas really it's 90%+ nurture. It's just that most people won't nurture that skill set. And I made the percentages up, FYI, but they won't nurture that skill set. And they go, well, you know, I'm an introvert and da da da. And what another thing, just to take it one step further, a lot of people who think they're introverts, they're not. They're shy. And you can tell that these people, if this is you, then listen up. When you're a kid, you're really outgoing. And as you got older, you were outgoing, and then dot, 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 you got dumped or you got fired or your parents got divorced and then you became really quiet and introverted. You're probably not a natural introvert. You probably just learned some sort of traumatic psychological lesson and now you think you're an introvert because you don't want to subject yourself to social pain, or you were overweight and you went and people rejected you, or you went to school and people bullied you. Like, that's the type of thing that makes people shy. And it doesn't mean that you're naturally an introvert. It means you're hiding, right? And so that's a lot of folks as well. And so there's a lot of people who are introverts and got bullied, and it's hard to tell which is which. But the truth of the matter is, it doesn't actually matter at all. You can either learn to be social, you can learn to network and create relationships for business, or you can be somebody who leans on the excuse. And that's all it is an excuse that I'm introverted, so I can't do this. But at the end of the day, the people who win at life generally are the people that can create alliances and relationships, and they don't lean on the excuse that they're naturally introverted. You don't get food stamps because you're introverted, right? Well, you know, we're going to have to give you that promotion because you were unable to socialize your way and create the relationships you needed to be on the winning team here. That doesn't happen, right? You just lose. So if you're sitting here going, I don't want to have to learn this, I have a special, you know, I'm a special snowflake, you're just either unaware or in denial of the secret game being played around you, and therefore you lose. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense, man. Actually, last week I just gave a speech about this, how introverts kind of, because I'm an introvert too, born introverted, incredibly introverted. I like my time alone. You charge up when you're alone. I like, you know, writing blog posts, you know, writing, just being on the laptop, doing work and doing that. And that's how I charge up. But it's not natural for me to really go out and socialize and talk to people. But it's something I had to get over years ago, and I did that by really pushing myself out of my comfort zone and putting myself into different situations where I was able to overcome that. And now it's almost like a switch, right, that I can kind of like click on, and when I want to be social and I want to be extroverted and talk to other people, I have that in me now where I can kind of just like click it on, and then when I want to charge back up and get back to my normal self, it's like, yeah, I can come back down and be an introvert again.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. And that's what I do, right? I jump on the mic. I'm extroverted. It's a performance. I go give a speech, which I consider a performance. I go out with my friends. I don't consider that a performance, but, I put the effort in to be social. But I'm telling you, like everyone else, if I'm really tired, I go out with my friends and they go, you all right? And I'm like, yeah, I'm just really tired. And they're like, okay. And that's it. You know, I'm less talkative that night, and it's totally fine. Other people have what I would call like crippling shyness where they can't even be around people. That's not introversion. That's social anxiety and should be treated.
Yeah. Yeah.
And totally. I know that's a bold statement because people are like, how dare you? You're not a doctor. I'm like, well, cool. You're unhappy with your life. If you're ignoring this as a problem, then I don't need to be a doctor to tell you this. And, you know, I get parents writing into the Art of Charm podcast mailbag as well. And they're like, you know, my kid is naturally introverted. I'm wondering if I can make him more outgoing because it's hurting him socially. And I'm like, well, tell me what's going on. And it's like half the time it's like he never leaves the house and has no friends. I'm like, OK, he's not introverted. Something is seriously wrong. He's probably got depression. Right. If you have no friends, like this isn't you needing quiet time at the end of a long day. This is you being phobic socially. That is not introversion. So I hate the term introvert because it's become this like medical excuse never to leave your house or not be social or not to form relationships, to the detriment of everybody that uses it or labels themselves or others with it. Mm-hmm. It's just BS. It's just not how it works.
Yeah, no, totally, man. Jordan, moving on, kind of like after your lawyer years and after your college years and stuff, was there sort of like one specific moment when you were like, yeah, I kind of made it, or like, I can make it doing this?
Well, frankly, I don't know. I don't think so, because when I look at the business and from like 2020 hindsight, I don't see like, well, that was the moment where I was like, this is going to be my job. It was kind of like, all right, we're young. We have tons of risk that we can take with this business because we're all young and like have no real responsibility. This is, you know, I was 25 or 27 or something at the time. And I just saved a bunch of money from Wall Street. You know, the market was going downward. We were already on an upswing with AOC. But no, I mean, we struggled for years and years and years and had a lot of stressful days and were like, man, I should just work at the post office. I always thought about the post office because it just seemed so mindless, you know, after I went in there. And so I thought, all right, this is going to be kind of an interesting and fun business to run. And then it became really stressful and I had nothing else to do. And then it was like, all right, I guess this is what's happening. And then in the last like several years, it's been like, damn, this is really successful. I'm so glad I do this. So there's not one moment. And I know that's not the same thing for everybody, because I've had friends who were on Shark Tank and they're like, yeah, our business was struggling. And then we went on Shark Tank and now we're doing really well. But truth be told, those businesses aren't doing as well as people think. And they had like a massive PR windfall, which most people can't purchase, you know, in any way. So it's not realistic. It's, you know, when you're in a tech company and you're working and you're struggling and you're getting paid by your investors and blah, 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 and you're about to go out of business and then you get acquired by Google. Yeah, that's the time at which everything changes for you, but also you probably lose your job. Right. So that's not how most businesses work, but it is a common misconception. And I'm glad that you asked, because it is a common misconception among a lot of folks actually go, what's the one sort of turning point? And the answer is there's not one, unless you've had some sort of dramatic thing happen in your business. And I mean, so dramatic that it trumps all the other dramatic things that happen in your business. There's not going to be like one turning point. If you're patenting something and you get your patent so you can finally go and pitch to people because your ideas are safe or something, yeah, maybe that's a turning point. But most businesses don't have one sort of post-hole linchpin watershed moment. You know, there are a bunch of those little ones that you don't even necessarily know at the time are that.
Yeah, it's sort of like when you're like losing weight or something, or if you're gaining like say muscle or something, if you're working out, you don't really necessarily notice it day to day. It just sort of comes on gradually over time. Then you look up one day and it's like, oh shit, I actually am like as far as I've come so far from when I started. And it's like everyone else notices it, but you really didn't even really notice it yourself. It's not like that cliche movie moment where it's like, oh, this one big thing I did and that's it.
Right, because I mean, think about it. If you're losing a bunch of weight, right? You don't go, hey man, what was the moment at which you were like, man, I lost a lot of weight? You're like, well, I lost 50 pounds and I'm trying to lose 20 more. So I guess it's every day that I look at the scale and it's lighter, right? And after you lose that 100 pounds and you're healthy-ish again, you know, well, I guess I'm done losing weight. But now what? Now I'm trying to tone up. Now I'm trying to get rid of, you know, it's a process. Nobody really goes, and that was the day I was like, I'm fit. Nobody has ever said that ever, right? It's not a thing. Nobody goes, but there might be a moment at which you go, and I ordered something off the menu that was healthy and I didn't even have to think about it or force myself. So in hindsight, that was when I knew eating healthy was a habit, or I went to the grocery store and I wasn't even tempted to buy junk food. That's when I knew that that habit had kicked into place. You don't know it at the time, but a year after that or weeks after that, you're like, oh yeah, I haven't bought Cheetos and Coca-Cola for like 2 months. That's awesome. Right. Then you might look at that as some sort of moment, you know, at that time, but in the moment, you're not looking or thinking about any of that stuff. And most entrepreneurs are so focused on other goals. They're not thinking about, like, let's wait for the next watershed moment. That's not, it's very unlikely that that's happening.
Yeah, no, it's totally true, man. Can you take us back to kind of the formation, I guess, of the original podcast? Was it Pickup Podcast or something like that?
Yeah, it was about meeting girls, and that was pretty much all we cared about. Like, not all we cared about was meeting girls, but that was all we cared about talking about on the show. And we sort of talked about networking, but people were like, yeah, I don't give a crap about that. Tell me about, you know, da-da-da. So it was never really a popular kind of, it was never really like a popular subject because we were young and we were talking to young people. We still had female fans and things like that, which was great, but we were mostly concerned with dating, and that was just kind of how it was. However, now it couldn't be further from it, because what we realized was, look, all of this stuff that we talk about can be applied to dating, and it can also be applied to business, and pretty much any other area of your life can be applied. You can apply social skills. And when you're looking at things that make you charismatic and attractive to the opposite sex, it's pretty much the exact same thing that makes you attractive to companies, that makes you attractive to, and by attractive, I just mean in the general sense, that makes you successful in sales. All that stuff is completely, there's like 100% overlap, just about. Mm-hmm.
Jordan, I heard in, I think, one of your past interviews that it was like really hard getting guests in the beginning. How did you kind of switch that up and start getting some bigger names and people to come on your show?
Yeah. In the beginning of doing the podcast, it was kind of crappy because I would ask people to come on the show and they were literally like, what's a podcast? Or, I mean, I even had some people say things like, lose my number. Why are you texting me this crap? You know, just like, I mean, talk about feeling bad. You know, you're sitting here thinking, I'm going to give somebody an opportunity, and they're actually like annoyed that you even ask them to do it. And after a while, we just kept building the audience, asking for favors and stuff. When we had people that knew us and were like, hey, would you consider doing our podcast and teaching an audience? And, you know, it was largely the benevolence of a lot of speakers and guests. And then now, of course, they pitch us. And it's funny because a lot of times some of those older guests, they'll email or would be guests that I pitched that denied us, in fact, were really rude about it. They'll say things like, hey, you know, it's been a hectic year. How you been, buddy? Or 2 years. Oh, it's been a long time. Hey, I'm releasing a new book. It would be great to, you know, come on the show finally. And I'm just like, I'm so tempted to be like, go fly a kite, but in a more colorful way. However, now I'm just like, yeah, I think we're going in a different direction, because generally those are like the pickup artist guys that only see things in it for themselves, and, you know, or internet marketers and just other people that I just do not want to talk to and do not want to deal with at all. It's sort of funny now, because now we have such a long list of guests that want to come on that are all really high quality. But in the beginning, yeah, it was tough. You had to kind of like build a relationship and say, would you consider coming on my show? And, you know, you can talk about your book. I don't have a huge audience, but, you know, I can create a piece of content for you that you can post up. And a lot of people said no. And now no one says no. No one. I mean, some of the celebrities, PR people will be like, we'll put you in a rotation when we are in promotion mode. But nobody's like, I don't want to do this. It's not worth my time. Almost nobody. I mean, we've even had like billionaires that you've heard of be like, yes, I will do this, but I can't do it now because, you know, the Mavericks are in the playoffs or whatever. And I'm like, that's legit. You know, that's cool. Yeah. I can do that.
I wonder which billionaire that is.
Yeah, that's it. But there's a lot of stuff like that, and I'm like, hey, you know what? This is cool. I'm totally comfortable with getting rejected by those types of folks. I'm totally cool with it, you know, because it's also we'll do later. I'm like, I'll take it. I'm cool with that. You know, these aren't even hard. At this point, they're not even hard no's. So if you're having trouble getting people on your show, you know, if you keep at it, you build up a really good loyal audience. It's you become a media stop now. And even so, podcasting is in its infancy even still. So a lot of PR people who are kind of old school are like, podcasts don't matter. But yet they'll put their person on some blog that no one reads, or they'll go on some like radio show that has a local market. And I think a lot of it is PR people not really understanding about digital because they're 50 or they're 40 and they're like, I don't even have one of them smartphones. And I'll get you in, you know, such and such magazine. And it's like, all right, whatever. So we just kind of bide our time and build up a guest roster. And then when we pitch people with warm intros and don't go through their PR people, we're like, look, here's who we've had on. You'll be in good company. And then they just kind of they end around their PR gatekeepers and do the show anyway. And then you get enough of those people that, you know, you get Tim Ferriss and Mark Cuban on there and stuff. If somebody says no to going on your show, I wonder what the hell their reason could possibly be.
Yeah. That's such a great position to be in, right, Jordan? It's like you're the guy that everyone's going to now. You're like, you're the person. Whereas, you know, a few years ago, it was like you were trying to get all these people on. So it's really, it's quite this switch from where you were to where you are now. Do you have any, like, back then, I guess, when you were sort of building it up, what was your kind of go-to for pitching people? Do you have any kind of tips for, like, up-and-coming podcasters, like, for maybe a way of, like, reaching out to some bigger names, celebrity or podcast guest to get them on?
It's going to be about showing them what the good company they're in. So first of all, you want to cite numbers and not beat around the bush. And you want to say, look, you know, I've had Tim Ferriss and I sold a lot of books for him. I had Ramit Sethi on here and I got more traffic for him than da 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 and had six figures in business for him. And I had James Altucher and he's a best-selling author. I had Michael Port and he's a best-selling author. That way, if someone else is a best-selling author and they're really busy, they're going to go, oh, okay, well, these people deemed it worthy enough to go on, and it's all good. So it's all social proof in the beginning, because until your show is so obviously big that it's like on the front page of iTunes, and you know, I'm like, look, I'm in the business top five, I'm beating Harvard Business Review in iTunes. Will you come on my show? They're like, oh my God, hell yeah, because they would pull out a tooth to get into Harvard Business Review. And I'm higher ranked than them and I'm pitching them. So it's a no brainer. But until then, show them they'll be in good company.
Mm-hmm. For sure. What is what's the podcast prep look like for a guest that you're having come on? Do you simply just like Google them, research some of their background, look at their about page, or is it more of like, and do you like prep the questions, or is it more of just kind of free flow conversation style?
My producer and I do a pre-interview with them. And then from there, we formulate questions and do research. But my producer handles most of that now because I'm really, really busy with AOC and speaking and presenting and things like that.
All right, guys, I think it's the perfect time to take a quick break from the episode to remind you to subscribe to our show. By subscribing, you get every single episode completely free. That's right, get all of our best interviews with the best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and entrepreneurial worlds absolutely free. Don't miss out on any one of our captivating and exciting episodes. Subscribe now and get all of the Elite Man podcast anytime and anywhere. And yes, if you get a chance, leave us a glowing review about how much you love the show and how awesome we are. Okay, guys, back to the episode now. As far as monetizing the podcast, do you mind talking about like that switch from when you were just a free, you know, open kind of podcast to when you kind of had that jump to where you could actually make money or like a living out of the podcast?
We started making a living off of the products before we started making any money from the podcast. In fact, making money directly from the podcast is only in the past couple of years, because by the time you have an audience that's big enough to actually give you ad sponsor money that's going to be big enough to make a living, you're probably going to have a product or service that's going to make more money for you. Mm-hmm. Unless somehow you're one of those celebrities who has nothing to offer other than the audience, and then you just amass a huge audience, you know, and then you sell ads on it. But I think those people are missing the bigger picture, but they're already rich and famous, so they don't care.
Jordan, who's the most interesting guest you've had on your show? Or one of them that you can think of, at least.
I think, well, man, we've had so many interesting people on the show. There's some guy, recently I had Gary Vaynerchuk come on and I asked him a bunch of stuff he's never heard before. So that was cool. And that's coming out this week, first week of October 2015, depending on when you're listening to this show, right? And it goes really deep into his mindset and what drives him, what keeps him rocking and rolling. And for other, I've had Larry King on the show. He was interesting in his own way. I've had, of course, Tim Ferriss from Meets AT on here. If people are really interested, they can go to theartofcharm.com/best. And I've got like a best of page where I've got people that you've probably never heard of that just created amazing, amazing content for The Art of Charm.
Jordan, what's the number one thing that you'd say separates the Art of Charm podcast from so many of the other, you know, sea of podcasts out there? Like, what has led to the success and growth of it?
Well, I mean, we consistently serve the audience. We're not sitting here trying to tease things so that we can make affiliate commissions. We're constantly upping our game. You know, oh, if we buy this piece of equipment, it'll sound a little bit better, but it's probably not necessary, but let's get it anyway. So, you know, oh, well, if I was more patient with this and if I read the book before I interview the guy, the interview will be that much better instead of, you know, trying to get quick bullets that everybody else has asked them. All right. So we always go the extra mile. And now that I've got a full-time producer Jason, we go the extra 10 miles where it's like, we read both of your books and we read your blog and we know what's coming up and we looked at your Twitter feed and, you know, we talked to one of your friends, you know? So we ask people questions and they're like, how the hell did you even know that? You know, and it ends up being relevant to what we're talking about. And we really coerce a lot of good stuff out of the guest, and we don't let them off easy. You know, if they say something like, well, you know, you just got to put yourself out there. I'm like, well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it means this. Well, okay, how do we do that? Oh, well, I guess you could start with this. Okay, and then what? You know, versus just like, oh, so what's your secret to success? Oh, take risk. Cool, man, thanks. What's your favorite book? You know, that's what a lot of shows are doing now, and it's stupid. Like, gives a crap what your favorite book is. I want step-by-step stuff. I can read books on my own. I can't call Mark Cuban and ask him a question. So now that I've got him on the line here, I want to ask him a lot of questions. And I'm thinking for the audience, you know, what questions do you have? That's what I'm thinking when I'm talking with people.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Kind of put yourself in the audience's shoes. And because that's, you know, honestly what, if you ever listen to podcasts on your own, like not even just your own show, like that's what you're always thinking, like, oh, I hope he asks this question, or I hope he's going to bring that point up, or why didn't he follow up with that, you know?
Exactly. You want to be thinking, you don't want your audience to go, oh, why didn't he ask him this? And that's going to happen anyway, but you want to minimize that.
Yeah, yeah, as much as possible. Do you kind of keep that conversational, you know, vibe though going? Do you think that's great for the podcast, or is it more strictly based off the questions and the prep going into it? Do you kind of stick to the plan beforehand?
No, I'm always free flowing. I flip the plan out the window the second the show starts. I'm back to it if the guest and I are like, so, but I'm not like, I got to get this thing out that is in this email that we wrote, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Jordan, you kind of transitioned into doing some speaking as far as I know. Has the podcast, has there been any like carryover from the podcast? Has it helped you as far as getting in front of people and speaking in front of them too?
Definitely. I'm more confident in the way my voice sounds on a mic. I know how to use a mic. I know how to assemble content. I know how to present content. I know how to roll with punches, especially if something doesn't work right on stage, etc. So, yeah, I mean, it's really been helpful. When I took actually a speaking course with my friend Michael Port, and he's an amazing coach, and I did the course, and people were like, man, you must have done a lot of speaking. And I've had a few talks, but not a ton at this point in time when I took the class. And it was a much easier thing for me than I originally thought. And the reason is because I'm used to talking into the mic. I'm used to assembling the content. I'm not afraid of the audience. I'm not afraid of people asking me questions. I'm not afraid to handle something. I can think on my feet because I did live radio for so long. So all of that stuff made it so easy for me. So easy for me to create content and go up on stage and present it. I just needed tuning from that point onward, and that's what I got from coaching. So it's actually been pretty. You're right. It does carry over quite a bit, and it has. And so I would say, if you're thinking about getting into speaking from podcasting, it's definitely something that you'll see a lot of overlap.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have any other tips that might help guys or, you know, potential speakers who don't necessarily know or where to begin as far as getting or practicing or perfecting their speech technique?
Getting a coach is always the best way to learn anything, because you can read books and you can watch videos, but at the end of the day, the only way to really like nail something is to get expert critique from somebody that does it for a living and understands exactly how to tailor it for you. Because a lot of the people in the speaking class, Michael Port, for example, who's my coach for speaking, would say, okay, look, Jordan does this. He's walking around. He's loud. He's making fun of people and working the crowd. You're a lawyer. Don't do that. You know, you're a doctor. Don't do that. Oh, look, you're really quiet and subdued. So you need to come out and be like, bam, and then you can go from there. You know, there's all kinds of different things that go into the craft of speaking and performance. And so general advice doesn't work. If you want to get really good at speaking, you need to get a coach. You want to get really good at anything, you need to get a coach. That's why I get coaching for everything, because I am a coach and I'm like, why would I not get a coach? I know this. I know that having great coaches are worth their weight in gold, and it's always the best way to do it. So,
yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people probably listening are like, yeah, it's Jordan Harbinger, you know, famous guy in the self-help world. You know, why does he need coaching? Or they think like you never would take coaching, but it's kind of interesting to hear that you get coaching for everything.
For pretty much everything. Like I have a trainer. And it's not because like, oh, I've got a trainer because I don't know how to lift weights. I was a bodybuilder all through college. I started lifting weights when I was 14. I need a trainer because I need somebody who's going to read articles all day about nutrition and fitness and apply things to my body. I'm not just going to go there and do bench press and do some push-ups and pull-ups and the same weight routine I did in the 90s. Yeah, you know, it's not going to be effective. Of course not. But I also don't have the time to keep up on the latest science because it's not a hobby of mine. It's something I do to stay in shape, right? I've got coaches and professionals in my life for pretty much everything because I don't want to have to do stuff on my own. It's not because, oh, I can afford to do that because I'm lazy. It's, look, for me, the amount of time saved and the amount of effort saved getting something done right by experts or with experts is always worth it. It's always worth it. And they help you build good habits. And more importantly, they help you not learn bad habits. You can go up and speak a bunch of times all you want. And if you're getting coached by amateurs, like you're in a Toastmasters club or something, you'll be an okay speaker. You'll never be a great speaker. You know, even these guys that win like the number one Toastmasters world championship speaking competition, which is a real thing, they're only okay. They're really not that good. I would not hire that person to speak for my company. Because they would follow the Toastmasters stuff to the letter and only be decent.
Yeah, that's pretty funny though. Jordan, what's the number one kind of characteristic or trait about you that you think has led to your success? Something that you do or something that you kind of were born with that really helped you get to where you are?
Well, I don't know if I was born with it. I'm sure I wasn't. But my dad taught me tenacity and to just work really hard as a virtue. And I don't mean like never give up. You should give up on things that aren't working at a certain point. But he was just like, work really hard, outwork everyone, you know, and that's totally what I'm doing. And what we do at the Art of Charm, if somebody's not willing to work like we do, they get fired really fast. We obviously try not to hire them in the first place, but of the people at AOC that have gotten canned over the last like 4 years, 5 years, it's always a work ethic issue. It's never a talent issue. It's almost never even a personality issue with certain exceptions. It's almost always a work ethic issue. They just can't do it. And producer Jason works like 60, 70 hours a week. But the reason he does it is because I'm working 80, right? And work can look like a lot of things. It can be on mic. We can be reading the books for the guests. We can be traveling to a conference. It could be speaking and prep. So it's not like grinding away, answering emails for 80 hours a week, going crazy. But it's a lot of work. And if people can't keep up, they can't stay focused, then they won't be able to do the amount of work necessary for us to succeed, in which case, they're not a good fit. And so we find that a lot of people have that problem, like a whole lot.
So are you kind of like one of those workaholics, like even if you're working, like obviously you love your job, but when you're working, you just like can't stop working?
Pretty much. Yeah, totally. I'm totally one of those guys. And I know that sounds like bad and people go, but work-life balance and entrepreneurship and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, nope, that's not a real thing. If you really love what you're doing, you find it really hard to not work on it. And I do too. So when I relax, like I'll go on vacation and I'll be like, ah, I've got nothing to do. I'm going to go sleep in. I'm going to go out to eat. I'm going to go for a swim. And then that night I'm like, let's check the Art of Charm show, social media. Let's look at the engagement. It's not because I'm like, ugh, I've got to check the engagement. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to check the engagement. You know, I can't wait to look and see how this product is being received by the audience. I can't wait to see what people think of this episode of this podcast with this particular guest. Like, I want to see that stuff. And I can't think of other things that I would rather do more. And so it doesn't feel like work. So I don't believe in the work-life balance thing, really. I think that's something people say when they don't like what they do.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a personal question, but does your girlfriend ever get annoyed? I know my girlfriend's always kind of like, you know, like not mad, but like kind of annoyed that I'm always doing like kind of the same thing, like just check, because I love my job too. I love what I do. I'm always like checking things like that. Does your girlfriend ever get annoyed with that?
No, because she works for the Art of Charm.
Oh, good. No shit.
So she's like, hey, we've got a lot of – sometimes she'll be the one who's like, look, I know you want to go to the movies tonight, but you've got a lot of email, and you didn't really do any this morning because we went for a bike ride. And I'm like, okay. Like, she's even more on the ball than me.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a really good match.
You mentioned a good point, though, as far as, you know, having that never give up kind of tenacity. When is a good point to give up if things aren't working? Like, how long, I guess, does it take to really notice that if things aren't going right, you should probably try something else?
Yeah, I don't know, dude. I mean, honestly, like, that's a question people ask a lot, and I don't know, because I've never... you can't really look at 2020 hindsight like, yeah, okay, good thing I didn't give up on Art of Charm because it worked out, right? But there's probably a lot of other things I did give up on that would have worked out too. So my thing is, if you don't mind the struggle, like if you're enjoying it, then there's no point giving up on it, but don't expect it to necessarily be successful inevitably, because it's not true. A lot of people are like, follow your passion. That's shit advice. Do not assume you're going to be successful because you follow your passion. That is complete crap. And people say it because they don't have anything else to say and they think it sounds good, but it's rubbish. But for me, looking at like when to know when to give up, it's kind of, you have to calculate return on investment and things like that, and the probability of success. But there's no really good formula for that because it's all speculation. So I say, if you're working on a business in say podcasting, take podcasting for example, if you would do your show even if nobody listened to it because you enjoy it doing it and you're comfortable not ever making any money doing it, then great, keep podcasting. If you're doing it because you want to get rich and you've seen me do it and you think that you'll eventually get that too, there's absolutely no reason to believe you will also succeed. There's just no reason.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, man. All right, here comes the what's the best book you ever – no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right.
So it's been a really great interview, man. Just a couple more questions, though, and then we do got to kind of wrap things up.
Mm-hmm.
What is the happiest professional or most proudest professional accomplishment you've had to this date?
Having a top 50 iTunes podcast, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, having millions of people listening to the show every month is awesome. Like, that's crazy, crazy awesome. The fact that you have this much influence is great.
It's incredible, like, who you're beating out. You mentioned the Harvard Business School and some of the other, like, major companies out there that have, like, podcasts and stuff. It's really incredible, like, that you know, started this on your own and that you're beating all these other places out.
Yeah, I won't lie. I'm a competitive SOB. So the fact that I'm, like, ahead of some of those places, I'm like, good. You know, I'm not one of those who's like, there's room for everyone at the top. I'm not that guy. Like, that's great. And especially in self-help land, everyone's like, it's all about, you know, sharing and caring. And I'm like, look, I help people all the time. I help people for a living. I help people for free. I have tons of friends I love to see succeed. It doesn't mean I don't want you to succeed, but it does mean I want to be right ahead of you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, me and Lewis Howes, we look at each other and we're like, I want Lewis to succeed. Lewis wants me to succeed. You know, he makes intros to people that help me. I make intros to people that help him. We make each other, we get sent over each other sponsors and stuff. But you bet your butt when I look at iTunes, if he's a spot ahead of me, I'm like, okay, what the hell happened here? You know, and we joke about it with each other because it doesn't mean we're not on the same team. It just means we're both competitive SOBs. It's probably kind of a flaw, but it's also the reason that we're kicking everybody else's butt. You know what I mean? And you need that as an entrepreneur. You can have a lifestyle business where you're like, I make X grand a month and I'm happy and I chill and I play a lot of racquetball. That's cool, but that's not a legacy business. You're not handing it to your kids. Don't have any delusions that you're making a huge impact on the world. You're making an impact maybe, but you're not creating the amount of impact that a big business is that's really focusing all of their resources on this. And I think that's great. You know, a lot of people aren't cut out for that. I have to create this. This is like, I feel like one of those like tortured writers who's like, I write to get it out of my brain. You know, I do the show to get this stuff out into the world and to get it out of my consciousness and to have an excuse to talk to experts. You know, I'm not sitting here going, count down to when I can go lay around. I just have way too much energy for that. Talk to me in 30 years. Maybe I'll be that guy. But for now, I'm young, no kids. Like, I am cranking away. And everyone here at AOC is doing the same thing.
That's awesome, dude. So what are your future plans? I guess this is the last kind of wrap-up question for the podcast. What are some future plans, future goals, where you want to be in the next couple of years, Jordan?
I want the podcast to be in the top 25 in iTunes instead of just the top 50, quote unquote, just the top 50. I definitely want, you know, to add millions more downloads per month and start really bringing in super high level celebs and things like that. Podcasting as a quote unquote medium should have cred over that amount of time. And yeah, I mean, for me personally, I'm going to get married and have kids at some point in the next couple of years, but also growing the Art of Charm to where this is the type of thing where it really makes the money isn't something I think about as much. I don't even think about it now, frankly. It's not really about the dough for me. There's a lot of places where we could make more money and we don't. And the reason is because it would distract us from what we're doing now, and also because it might screw with our brand and we're just not willing to do that. So for me, I don't have any hard goals other than to continue to grow. And to continue to build the AOC brand in the way that's true to us, which is what we're doing now.
Awesome, man. And what's a place that our listeners can check out more about you?
You can find more about us at theartofcharm.com or go into iTunes and search for The Art of Charm, and you'll find The Art of Charm podcast. Subscribe and let me know what you think. I'm Jordan at theartofcharm.com if people have questions or want to email me.
All right, man. Thanks so much for coming on, dude. I know our audience is really going to love this episode, so I really appreciate it.
Right on. Thanks, man.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing, you get every single episode completely free. That's right, get all of our best interviews with the best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and entrepreneurial worlds absolutely free. Don't miss out on any one of our captivating and exciting shows. Subscribe now and get the Elite Man podcast anytime and anywhere. And yes, if you get a chance, leave us a glowing review about how much you love the show and how awesome we are. All right, guys, that's it. Until next time, take care.